Welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Cthulhu Root Lore Tower, brought to you by Lucky Mojo Spirit Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, JD, at CthulhuHouseDetroit.com in Detroit, Michigan. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Captain Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and Conjurman of ConjurmanConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, Doc Murphy, of RootDocMurphy.com in Pagenstown, Minnesota, bringing us today's discussion on One Wicca Met Cthulhu. Together, they will give you an in-depth look at the subject and then provide a related free spell near the end of the program. But first, let's catch up with our co-host, Catherine Ironwood and Condiment. Miss Kat?
Hi, JD, and thanks for pitch hitting as announcer. I just have a few things to announce going into the show. Number one, this show will be 1 hour long, not an hour and a half. We are returning to our roots as the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour. Number two, I just want to thank Aaron, Eileen, and Colleen for going out to the first annual SoCo Pagan Fest, Sonoma County Pagan Festival 2025. And they had a wonderful time, had a great display of products. People purchased products. We got to meet new people in the Sonoma County area who are more pagan than they are into folk magic or hoodoo. So that's a great lead into today's show, because that's what we're doing today, When Wicca Met Hoodoo. How about you, Conjurman? What's going on with you?
Well, things are well. It's been a busy time for me, but I'm happy to be here with you. I can't believe we're in October already. The years, they really flown by. It's a very exciting time, a very strange time, a very surreal time that we're all living in. A part of me kind of is excited that 2025 is over. let this be over. Let October, November, December go by very fast. But then another part of me is going, no, please don't. I can't believe the year is already over. But here we are. Here we are. We are at the beginning of October, and we have a very exciting topic for you, one that we chatted about before, and I'm really excited to dive in.
Would you like me to announce the winners of the last 2 weeks while we were away for 1 week, the last 2 weeks of contests?
Go ahead and announce the winners.
Okay, well, the winner for 2 weeks ago for the Hoodoo Psychics Magic Mondays, winning a free reading with your favorite Hoodoo Psychics 2 weeks ago, was Trini Dunn. And this week, the winner for the same contest run a week later was Delina Silverfox. 2 weeks ago, the Facebook Fridays contest was for a collected spells for all occasions part one, which included the following books: Cursing and Crossing by Miss Aida, Deliverance by Kai Armand, Hoodoo Return and Reconciliation Spells by Deacon Millet, Cashbox Conjure by Miss Phoenix LeFay, and Sneaky Tricks by Miss Michael and Catherine Ironwood. And the winner for that package was Holly Tucker. This week, we had 8 prizes that went out for the 9-Herb Spiritual Bath Pack. And the winners were Marissa Naska, Jerry Olivares, Linda McLean Knox, Chloe Rose Darling, Susie Flowers, Amanda Mandy Harrison, Tom Schick, and Brian Jeffers Atkins. Turning it back over to you, Miss Kat.
Okay. If you all are not entering these contests, you're losing out on free products and free books. All right, well, we're going to welcome our guest today. And our special guest is Doc Murphy from way up in the northern Midwest. So welcome to the show, Doc.
Welcome, welcome.
Hi, it's good to be here again. It's good to get to talk with you all again, and I'm really excited to be back here on the show.
Well, our topic tonight is When Wicca Met Hoodoo. And we had a little meeting about this before we went on the show. And one of the things that Conjurman said in his very academic voice was, this is a lot of history. And And it's true. So I'm going to just start this off with an idea here for folks. Hoodoo was, due to segregation and the conditions that prevailed in the United States, kept separate from other forms of folk magic. As we know, it originated in Africa, but took into it elements of European folk magic, Christian religion, and also as emancipation produced the Great Northern Migration and people began to move out of farm life and into urban areas, they began to get their herbs from drugstores, many of which were owned by Jewish people who had their own system of folk magic. So that kind of got folded into it. And at the same time, herbologists at the time were really promoting and discovering what were called Indian herbs, by which they meant Native American, quote, Indian, unquote, herbs, not herbs from India. And there was a big company run out of Philadelphia by a Dr. E.P. Reed, who was black, and he bought the company of a man named Mr. Delano, which was called the Indian Herbs Company. Mr. Delano was part Native American. And so this became part of black culture, that you could buy Indian herbs from an African-American man with a large mail-order drugstore in Philadelphia. So hoodoo accepted all of these different forms. And then, meanwhile, starting in the 50s, Gerald Gardner and the British traditional witches began to form lineages of a religion that was called Wicca. But part of that religion included the absorption of British folk magic. Mm-hmm. And that came to America pretty early on, but really got going during the Vietnam War era. And then that kind of, those two kind of percolated separately. And then sometime in the 1990s, Wicca met hoodoo full on. And so that's where we're at. I'm going to turn this over to you, Doc Murphy, because I know you have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, some anthropological observations as well. As you noted, the history really kind of in this country definitely kind of kept those cultures and those worlds and those methods of doing magic secret. Wicca in and of itself is supposed to other types of witchcraft that came out of England. Wicca is a religion. It has a liturgy. It has a cosmology. And traditions that have sprouted and call themselves Wicca with another tradition usually have their link back to Gardnerian and British traditional Wicca. And Wicca was always this mix of ceremonial magic and lodge style magic influence, as well as English folk magic. So to kind of give an idea of kind of why it has the flavor that it does, Gerald Gardner was a member of a Masonic lodge with Philip Cargom, who went on to form the Modern Druids. He was interested in starting an OTO chapter, changed his mind when he wanted to create his own thing, tried to get Aleister Crowley to write rituals. Crowley wasn't interested, so they borrowed published material. So there was that, definitely that ceremonial kind of influence, and also in the way they structure liturgy. They cast a circle. They have a Tyler. They have kind of ceremonial steps that come from Masonic lodges. But as initiates started to come into the coven, and most notably his first four initiates, women, Patricia Crowther, who passed away recently, Ray Bone, the other two whose names are escaping me right now.
Doreen Valiente.
Valiente. Mm-hmm. And there was a fourth again, who's I'll have to Google right now. At any rate, they were the ones that kind of took the liturgy of Wicca and kind of necessarily kind of sliced kind of the Crowley-esque kind of overwordiness of it and less focus on the ceremonial aspects of the magic, and definitely start to incorporate more of the folk magic of their culture, you know, in England and Great Britain where they grew up. So Wicca, as it kind of floated into America, definitely the two tracks, ceremonial and then ceremonial magic and then folk magic. But as kind of the movement itself, and as the American pagan movement kind of started to spread and bloom, became sort of less of an emphasis on ceremonial magic and definitely more interest in folk magic. Sometimes folks called it kitchen witchery or herbal magic or green magic, the kind of magic that was about, you know, feet in the dirt, herbs in your backyard sort of magic. And right around the 90s, there came a real hunger, not only for ancestral interest, not so much of a focus on Englishness, but also a real focus on really wanting to know folk magic of place, really wanting to know folk magic of one's own cultures, a lot more embracing of folks' multi-ethnic and intersectional identities. And blending those things together. And while sort of separations between folk magic and ceremonial style magic and hoodoo and all these other kind of, we're all in these little kind of separate, you know, areas. Those boundaries are kind of blurred and actually are kind of melding together as more and more pagans are finding out about hoodoo as a method of folk magic that a lot of us have felt a real yearning and a real need to learn. A lot of it because a lot of pagans are like, look, if our religion and our magic is about our place and where we're at, our feet are in the dirt here in the United States, let's learn the history of the magic here of, you know, America. And like you said, a much more of a focus on lived magic, less structure, less ceremony, and more creating rituals and magic with, you know, the neighborhood and the backyard in mind. So that's just kind of a setup of how that culture kind of morphed over time. The observation here in Paganistan is maybe about 10, 15 years ago. I mean, we have had pagan students of yours, Ms. Kat, of your Hoodoo Correspondence course, who loved the course and were eager, and about 10, 15 years ago, kind of the community, the pagan community, kind of didn't get it and wasn't quite ready for it. Now it's embraced. We have a real active presence of pagans of color community here in Paganistan in particular, and a real genuine interest in learning about other cultural magics and being respectful and kind of putting it all together.
Well, I want to go back to our topic. Yeah. When Wicca met hoodoo, and this is far earlier than the 1990s. This has come in waves. The first ideas of Wicca, if we date them from the 50s, we could say that hoodoo had already incorporated and was making use of European folk magic, particularly powwows for the long lost friend, but Wicca was not making use of powwows or the long lost friend either when it was new. It wasn't just that Wicca didn't know about hoodoo. They didn't even know about Pennsylvania Dutch Brouwerij. They were very much centered on the focus of what I would call Anglo-Celtic recreation of an Anglo-Celtic religion. There were a lot of Wiccans I knew, and I'm much older than you, Doc, going back to the 60s and 70s, who absolutely abjured any magic at all, not even blessing. They would not bless a person without that person's express permission, because for them, folk magic really was not part of their religion. So it isn't just that they were all white people that didn't know any black people, but it was that they were all religionists who barely understood folk magic.
The theology is where it's at, is what you're
saying. That's right. At that time. So when did Wicca meet hoodoo? And I'm going to name a few people that I felt were really important much earlier. One of them was a woman named Charmaine Day, also known as Charmaine the Champagne Blonde. She was a model and stripper, and she toured on a circuit of strippers with her husband, Steve Day, who was gay, and he was a dancer, an eccentric dancer, as they called him. And he made all of her costumes and costumes for other people in the troupe. Well, they got stranded in Houston, Texas. They had started in the Upper East Coast, and she was Polish-American. And her name was June Zablowski. And they got stranded in Houston, and I don't know, she was bored, she was curious. She went into Bichon's drugstore. Now, Bichon's drugstore was started by a French man, Louis Bichon, and he had a family, and the drugstore had continued for quite a while. But that part of town had become known as Catfish Reef and was becoming more and more Black as more Black people came in to work in the shipyards during World War II. By the time June Zablowski got there, the Bichon drugstore was a full-out hoodoo drugstore with herbs, oils, roots, candles, and everything you might consider now would be a hoodoo drugstore. Similar things were happening in Philadelphia, where when E.P. Reed died, there was a Harry's Pharmacy and Harry Seligman's Pharmacy, and his son, who was also named Harry, decided not to become a pharmacist, and they bought a building that had was on a corner, and they had two doors on two different streets. One was the pharmacy. You walked in, you went to the pharmacy, and the other one, you went around the corner, and you went into what was called Harry's Occult, and that was took the place of E.P. Reed's big pharmacy for hoodoo. So these were there, but when Charmaine went to Bichon's drugstore, she began to learn about hoodoo, and she became fascinated by it. And she really began to study folk magic, folklore. There were old books available, C.J.S. Thompson books, books of you know, British folk magic, and she really got into it. She and her husband ended up in Las Vegas, and by that time, she was aging out of the stripper occupation. She was 36. And they were appearing at the Frontier Hotel. And also at the Frontier Hotel, there was a trade show for London Fish and Chips. And the spokesperson for London Fish and Chips was a woman named Sybil Leake. And Sybil Leake had an interest in divination, folklore, and folk magic of England. She was absolutely an English woman. She and Charmaine hit it off. And Charmaine said she wanted to get, you know, she was getting too old to be a stripper, and she wanted to start a drugstore or a hoodoo shop, kind of like Bichon's, but it was against the law in Clark County, Las Vegas, to do fortune telling. And Sybil Leake said, "Hold my beer." And she went out and she claimed falsely, but they couldn't prove it, that she was lying. She said, "I'm a hereditary gypsy. I'm one of the Irish travelers. Telling fortunes with cards is my genetic hereditary right, and it would be discrimination to forbid it." And the entire Clark County Commission caved. They absolutely said, "Oops, we were wrong. Of course, you're a hereditary witch, Miss Sybil Leake." And she just said, "Okay, we've changed the law." Charmaine started her store, which was called Bell Book and Candle. Now, Bell Book and Candle was a name based on an old movie, which was about witches, not about hoodoo. And so she was positioning herself as a witchcraft practitioner. Sybil taught her a lot. Sybil ended up writing and having ghost written for her quite a few books on spell casting and so forth. And Sybil went on to be very well known as the public face of witchcraft as opposed to Wicca. But people who were interested in Wicca really kind of took to Sybil Leake. She was fabulous. She was dramatic. She had a beautiful accent. She was a spokesmodel for fish and chips. I mean, you know, she was great. And so that started a whole thing with the idea of witchcraft books. And Charmaine Day put out a book called The Magic Candle. And in that book, she began to talk about hoodoo-style candle work that she had learned in Houston.
Yeah, the first time, let me just add a little.
Go jump in.
Because the first time I actually picked up Charmaine Day's book, it was at a, not a hoodoo candle shop, but like a sort of neo-pagan, new age type shop. And I'm like, "Oh, magic candle. Okay, this sounds very familiar." So I picked up the book. It's a very interesting book, but I had already been working in the conjure tradition for a few years, and I was familiar with Henri Gamache and these other writers. And as I was flipping through, I'm like, "Wait a minute, this looks very familiar. This sounds very familiar. What? Hold on a minute. This is this is hoodoo style candle working. And it was very interesting to see it because it was really the sort of the first book that I had picked up at this non-hoodoo store, but it was so obviously influenced by hoodoo that it just stood out. That it, had you known anything about Henri Gamache, had you known anything about candle working, particularly the sort of New Orleans candle working or the Mississippi style, but we've got to get some credit to Mississippi here, the Mississippi style working of with candles and the Baltimore style of working with candles, you would have recognized it immediately. And I found that incredibly interesting.
But she used a way to dress a candle with a pentagram.
Right, right.
And I looked at that and go, oh, God, she's so inauthentic. But I didn't realize that she was actually melding these two styles. And I want to give a shout out to somebody else, who is Jessie Wicker Bell. Now, Jessie Wicker Bell was a Wiccan, witchcrafty lady in the Midwest. And she went under the name of Lady Sheba. And it was the custom in those times for all members of Wiccan covens to have a coven name. And so she was Lady Sheba. And Lady Sheba's book, Lady Sheba's Grimoire, it's called, contains hoodoo spells for candle magic in it, including one that uses a circle where you move the candles and process them around like you might astrologically. And this sort of stuff was... That was also in the 70s. This sort of stuff was percolating in the 70s. The interesting thing to me is that on the West Coast, the Wiccans were much more in contact with hoodoo practitioners than in the Midwest. So Lady Sheba sort of stood out, but Charmaine Day, who was in Las Vegas, practically the West Coast, and the other one who blended them both was Anna Riva, whose real name was Dorothy Spencer. And Anna Riva also put books out that were very hoodoo-oriented, but they also contained Wicca-style invocations. They contained rhyming spells, which were European in style. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's a typical Anna Riva rhyming cadence, which is a European, it's particularly English cadence for an enchantment or spell. So all of this was going on. And I'm going to add one more name. I'm going to turn it back over to Doc then. One more name, Victor Anderson. And this is, again, about the West Coast. Victor Anderson was from the central Midwest, south Midwest, from Missouri, I believe. And he had started his own form of sex magic / Wicca. Now, I need to explain here for people who are unfamiliar with original Wicca, was based on sex magic. And although it has come a long way away from that and become much more open and friendly to people who do not wish for sexual participation, Gerald Gardner had been influenced by the OTO and Aleister Crowley, and that included sex magic style work. So Victor and his wife Cora Anderson had started something which they called Fairy Wicca. Wiccans later objected, and it just became known as fairy, the fairy tradition. And they changed the spelling of the word fairy. But fairy Wicca grew out, again, of Victor Anderson's knowledge of Ozark, Appalachian, and African-American folk magic. Mm. And when in the 90s, when Nagashiva and I went to Pantheacon, which was an all-pagan convention, people were actually trying to publicly shame us and putting us down and said, you know, you're doing terrible things, you're cursing, it's awful, you're terrible people. But we found people came up to our booth over and over again, do you have powwows or the long-lost friend? Yep. Because Victor Anderson told them that we were the only place you could get that book, and it had been his favorite folk magic book. Mm-hmm. And since powwows had already integrated itself into hoodoo and was used by hoodoo practitioners, this kind of was a bridge between African-American hoodoo, as it was in the from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, and then Wiccans all of a sudden, oh, we can buy powwows because Victor Anderson said so.
Maybe we can ask Doc Murphy here to jump in, because I'm very interested in, as a person who's looking at this both academically and also up close. We, in our discussion, identified several areas where there's now overlap, where these sort of hoodoo practices and ideas have made their way into this world. So maybe Doc Murphy can start us off in that direction and talk a little bit about some of the stuff that she's seen that has now made its way over, some of the practices, some of the techniques, some of the works, etc.
Oh yeah, it's really been interesting as a pagan myself who has been trained in Western style magic, but also is a student of the hoodoo correspondence course that Miss Kat has championed and had been that teaches, to be able to first off to kind of see, yeah, there's definitely some cultural differences, there's definitely some technique differences mm-hmm. that you kind of negotiate, but there's a lot of similarity and overlap too, and you realize that actually has come with the blending of practices and trads that Miss Kat so eloquently explained there. First off you could definitely see that within the community itself, there's still sort of a break between, you know, those who prefer to do their magic ceremonially and those who prefer folk magic. But folk magic, it definitely for folks, is getting more and more popular. And kind of where the overlap of practice comes is people are not satisfied with picking one or the other. They're basically saying, look, all this magic is here. We want a living tradition. Mm-hmm. I have an intersectional identity and I want to learn as much really great living magic as I can. So some of the practices that I have observed with folks who are pagan and who are hoodoo practitioners as well, is there definitely is the influences you've already talked about with Lady Shiva and candle magic.
Yeah.
And the styles of candle magic that are done. It seems to be that when people first get interested in either Wicca, paganism, Western style magic, or hoodoo, kind of the candles are like kind of what everyone kind of jumps for first. It seems to be the thing, you know, candles, yay, you got any? And then the candle magic starts. But other practices and interests that I've also observed and worked is there's definitely a growing interest in herbalism and an understanding of dried herbs that you purchase at the store being just as potent as the ones that you wildcraft. There's a lot of lore around wildcrafting herbs for Western magic, where you go out under the moon and you do it on the astrological sign of this, and you take your bowline and you do it naked in the, you know, there's just a lot of ceremony around even harvesting the herbs. Whereas you practice hoodoo, you walk down to XYZ occult store and you can go get some rue and you can go get some lemongrass that are dried on the wall, and you are in good with regard to herbalism, but also greater understanding and absorption of the doctrine of signatures comes from a lot of folks. While it is an aspect of theory of correspondences in Western magic, a lot of times the explanations to people new to Western magic, it can get some kind of convoluted and scholarly, that explaining why the plant does what it does or why the herb does what it does, sometimes can get lost in the ceremony of it all. Whereas the hoodoo's explanation of doctrine of signatures is just right to the point. This is a spirit that is indwelling in this herb and it will tell you what it will do for you. Just pay attention. And for folks in the pagan community who identify as pantheistic and who identify as animistic, and who this makes complete total sense, that of course the magic of the herbs and the curios that you're using in magic are going to be in relationship with you, that is catching on real quick. Mm-hmm. That's something that makes a lot of sense.
Can I jump in again? Again, to go back to the concept of how these groups met and what happened, it wasn't all shiny bright. Coastside Conjure mentioned a wonderful person, Glenn Turner. So Glenn Turner came out of the ceremonial magic field. In fact, she was part of the foundation of the new reformed Order of the Golden Dawn, and they were also getting into witchcraft style covening, right? But they also did ceremonial magic, and she started a shop in Oakland, California called Ancient Ways. And Coast said, my boss's mother was Glenn Turner. So Glenn Turner then started Pantheacon, which I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And Pantheacon, by the name, you can see it, was about goddess worship or god worship, but mostly it was goddesses, all the goddesses, all the gods. And they had workshops on these different deities and stuff like that. But Glenn had wanted to set her store up in Berkeley near the campus where there would be more white Wicca candidates or ceremonial magic practitioners, but the rent was too high. So she went just over the line into Oakland. And when she was in Oakland, that part of town was predominantly Black. And she was actually right across the street on Telegraph Avenue, across the street from a Black church. And people would come out of the church when the service was done and go over to Ancient Ways to buy herbs. But, and I went there too. It was a good place. But what I found out was people would sometimes take me aside and say, they don't have hot foot powder. Mm. Right? And I'd say, don't worry, you know. So I started Lucky Mojo right around the time when this meeting of the minds was happening. I could sell my stuff, you know, on commission or consignment at Ancient Ways, but they said, no, we can't take things like hot foot powder. We can't take things like gopher dust. And what actually kind of got me thinking about what I wanted to do with my shop was I was there and somebody came in, a Black woman came in and said, do you have gopher dust? And it looked like, when you looked at the shop, it looked like they should. But he said, no, we don't carry anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's baneful magic. And I actually kind of lay in wait for this lady. And I said, I can make you gopher dust. But, you know, here, you know, wrote down my phone, never call me. Right. So I began to sell the things that Ancient Ways would not sell.
Right.
And that, although we did end up at Pantheacon, that ended up with us being pretty much, I guess, I don't know why I want to use the word, shamed. Oh,
ostracized.
Yeah, that's a good one too. We were actually put behind a door. In other words, when you went into the vendor room, the door opened and we were behind that door.
Oh dear.
And they, no, seriously. I mean, so we never went back. We just went, okay, that's that. But I want to say another thing about another group. And I know it's all changed, Doc. I'm sure. I mean, I'm aware of that now.
That ain't happening now.
No, I know. It's all changed now. But I also remember when Clifford Lowe, who's a member of AIR, was kicked out of Pantheacon for doing a workshop on curses. And he had arranged it. But then when they saw what he was talking about, they like flipped. And so he was told he couldn't come back and have workshops at Pantheacon again. So this is a long time ago now. And I'm not trying to rehash old problems. But there was a problem. Also, at the same time, there were Black pagans in the Bay Area. And one of whom was Fern Campbell, who worked in our shop. And she had a coven. And another, Tanisha Mooney, who taught workshops when we started the Hoodoo Heritage Festival. Tanisha taught, and she was actually a pagan, although she was Black. That's, you know, it doesn't have to do with skin color, but she taught a workshop on bathing, on Hoodoo style baths. So there were these overlaps that were happening.
Right. In other words, what we're looking at is waves of this sort of interaction. We're not looking at just one moment, but rather there was these different waves and gradual. Right. I think one way we can really look at this, and this is, I think, really stands out for me as an example of this overlap, but also of the sort of where difference comes in. And then as Dr. Murphy has been really pointing out for us as our resident ethnographer, how it's also changed is mojo bags. So I grew up knowing about mojo bags when my teacher taught me at around 10 or so years old, and I was very familiar with it. But the first sort of occult shop that I went to that was non-hoodoo based was a Wiccan shop, and she was called herself a Wiccan priestess. And she had what was known as sachets there. These were these little bags of herbs that were there, but they were not mojo bags. They were a completely sort of different idea. And I remember she said that she would make me one for dreams. And I was like, okay, that's cool. In my mind, okay, that's a dream mojo. We have these. We know what this is. Mm-hmm. But then she explained it. She goes, well, the power comes from the scent. not the herbs. It's the perfuming that we put into it. It's the essential oils. It's the smell, which will then have do this thing that'll help you with your dreams. Oh, this is really interesting. And then over the years, you know, she sold this. I went back probably 7 years later or something like that. This is like the early 2000s. I would say probably 2007, 2008 is when I went back. I went back and she was selling actual mojo bags, like real mojo bags. And oh, where did you learn how to do this? So I went to New Orleans. I learned how to make these mojo bags. This is different from the sachets that we make. It's not just about the perfumes. It's the herbs themselves that have, this is what Doc Murphy was talking about, right? Like, oh, the herbs have a spirit within them. And so you could actually see in this one shop that I went to, this sort of gradual change where there was this difference, the introduction of the mojo bag, and then the idea of the mojo bag now becoming part of the shop. Where, of course, there was still some difference, I think, was one, she sort of sold mojo bags in this big container. You would just reach into the container, it was a big glass bowl, and you pick one out. And the other was that she said that she always put a little bit of herself in it, a little bit of her hair, a little bit of her nails, a bit of
whatnot. Oh my gosh.
Whereas in traditional hoodoo, you would not do that. The client would put a little bit of something themselves in there, or whoever you were working on, the shop owner wouldn't put their nail or hair. So you could still see a little bit of that difference, but you could see the way in which these traditions were now informing one another, and that there was this growth over the years.
Yeah, I remember when I was in grad school in Milwaukee, and I was hanging out at my Wiccan teacher's store, The Hand of Glory. They had a good relationship with a hoodoo candle shop in Milwaukee called Natalie's. And frequently, if, let's say, a client was going to Natalie's because they needed some, let's say, High John the Conqueror oil, and they were out, they would say, go to Hand of Glory. They have it. And so that store was an interesting meeting point when I would hang out there, not only for witches and pagans, but root doctors would walk in there and some tarots would walk in there. And that was what kind of opened up my mind to, like, oh, wow, there's this magical kind of crossover. And they serve all these people because, you know, the philosophies do overlap in a lot of ways. And with regard to baneful magic and cursing, I was going to say, boy, that's changed now. And it's, I've been actually teaching at pagan festivals, and, you know, basically workshops on justified cursing and getting pagans to think about what justification is from that lens. And let me tell you, they're getting it and it's catching on, and they're realizing that this is a form of justice, you know, justified magic. And yeah, sometimes you got to put a mad dog down when there's danger to the community, that they're wrapping their head around. And I don't care. It's been my experience. There comes a point with every witch who has said, I would never do baneful work. That's just my thing. Something happens in the world, or something happens to their family, or somebody, something happens to somebody. And they walk up to me and go, Doc Murphy, teach me how to do baneful magic because I'm ready now. And it's happened a lot. So,
you know, can I jump in here on something? We have not talked about racism and unconscious racism, but I am going to say something about that. Because back in the 80s and 90s, the Wiccans would tell me, oh, well, they, meaning Black people, they do cursing because they endured slavery. And their idea was they weren't even thinking about how they were presenting themselves as white and privileged. Right? We will never have to do that because we've dyed our hair red with henna and our name is O'Grady or whatever, you know. So that went away. It's gone now. But it was a time during the era when I first got into the Usenet, which was a part of the internet, which is very not used much anymore, but it was a huge part of the internet at one point before the web was devised. And I would be caught in these weird shouting matches with Wiccans who were totally obsessed with the idea that hoodoo is voodoo and it's evil and that they don't do that, but that it's okay that Black people did it because they had to contend with suffering and slavery. And I'm like, oh Lord, these people don't even see their unconscious biases. Now, it put a little chip on my shoulder, but I kind of, you know, I got over it because they eventually, that all sort of faded away. And there are people I now know who would not own their old Usenet posts because they would look back and think, yeah, that's, I was a little wrong then.
You know, thank you for calling that out, because that's 100% true. Even the word Black magic meant both literally Black people's magic, but also Black magic that was dark and evil and involved cursing.
That's right.
I think
that's
one area that we saw is this change, and I think Doc Murphy can really talk about this, is this transformation around the dead and the spirits of the dead. Whereas in Hoodoo, there is a very comfortable relationship with the dead, and that partly comes out of both the West African and Central African cosmology, but also the experience of Black Americans here, where Black cemeteries were often, particularly in the plantation era, were quite literally on the land that you still worked at, whereas European cemeteries tend to be fenced off, right? They're near the in the church or whatnot. But what we saw initially is this sort of fear towards the dead. We don't gather graveyard dirt. We don't work with the spirits of the dead. We don't call upon them. But as Dark Mercury has pointed out, and maybe you can talk a little bit about this, is how we are now starting to see more and more neo-pagans comfortable with the idea of ancestral practice, comfortable with the graveyard dirt, comfortable with it. And this sort of shifts the, you know, the initial sort of, oh, well, that's Black magic, both literally and the sort of moralized version of it, to now going, well, wait a minute, there's something here. Maybe there is power in the dead. Maybe there is a relationship with the ancestors that we can have. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that transformation to where the dead now do feature in some of this work.
I sure can. And like I said, if there's one aspect of hoodoo and of folk magic that has really worked its way kind of across the board for modern pagans and for Wiccans is ancestor work. This has absolutely been embraced as your ancestors are your first line of defense. And of course you would go visit them in the cemetery, and just having conversations with pagans and heathens that I know of saying like, well, it's not a matter of like you take dirt and you leave an offering. You are buying the dirt and you're, you know, and of course, wouldn't you want the spirit of your late grandfather who was a police officer protecting you? Of course you do. It makes perfect sense. And when you frame it that way, then they go, well, but of course, it's sensible. To give a little bit of good news with regard to the future of this overlap, yet again, I've been asked by the Earth House Pagan Festival to be a guest. And we have got the great root worker Heidi Holton also is a guest. And we also are having heathens coming to talk about heathen magic. So there's going to be this mix of content of heathenry, which is Northern European paganism and magic, and conjure and hoodoo from Heidi and myself. And the people are really excited. They want to learn other ancestral traditions, and they love learning about living magic. So
that's great. That's great. We have just a couple more minutes. I want to put another thing here. We did not talk about the East Coast, and I want to really quickly say that one of the big branches of paganism in the U.S. came from three different people, who all of whom were in military intelligence during the Vietnam War. And one was in L.A., one was in Philadelphia, and one was in Traverse City, Michigan. And they produced forms of witchcraft, but every one of them also knew about folk magic. And in particular, a guy named Joseph Bear Walker Wilson was married to an African-American woman, and therefore he introduced hoodoo into his pagan tradition, which was the 1736 tradition. He's passed away since. Another person who absolutely knew a lot about hoodoo, because he grew up near Harry's Occult in Philadelphia, was a guy who wrote about paganism under the name of John Hansen. He has also written under other names in different topics, and even written about his history as in military intelligence. He's a very interesting man. So those people also were welcoming to it. And there was a guy named Herman Slater who plagiarized the works of Ed Fitch in L.A., the Joseph Wilson and
Horrible Herman, wasn't he called?
Horrible Herman and John Hansen. He plagiarized and attempted to copyright their books. And the three of them got together and did a curse on him. And he and his partner both died horribly of AIDS. And they never regretted it. And because he had stolen their copyrights. But Herman had a guy from Louisiana who was known as Steve. And Steve had recipes for hoodoo-style oils, and he brought them also to the Warlock shop, and then they were brought to the Magical Child, which was Herman Slater's shop, which was based, again, with the name Magical Child. It was based on the work of Aleister Crowley. Mm-hmm. So, again, there was this thing, and Herman Slater's partner, Eddie Baczynski, had a pagan all-male group, and it was a gay male pagan tradition. So all of the, but they were also selling hoodoo products on the East Coast. So there's a little bit of everything going on here.
And the oils are where there's also a little bit of difference. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes. The real key for me is if someone says, do you carry banishing oil, whether as opposed to do you carry hot foot oil?
Yep. Yeah.
That's kind of a line. More and more white people are asking for hot foot oil now, I have noticed over the last 10 years. But we still make banishing oil for them. It's a different formula, entirely different formula, but it's an old traditional difference. All right. Well, we've covered this, when Wicca met hoodoo, and I hope that y'all look into this a little bit deeper. We've named names and told stories.
LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance that brings you the best in hoodoo, conjure, witchcraft, rootwork, new thought, spiritualism, and pagan ways. Our shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, live on Sundays from 3 to 4:30 Pacific Time, the Crystal Silence League Hour, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, and the Now You Know Show. All these shows are available as audio podcasts via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and at YouTube, where we make daily video uploads. Please like and subscribe at youtube.com/LuckyMojoCurioCo, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, makers of handcrafted spiritual supplies and offering the widest selection of magical herbs and roots, plus hundreds of free web pages filled with spellcasting tips and fortune-telling techniques. Our shop is located in Forestville, California, and we sell retail and wholesale online at LuckyMojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by the Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker today. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. By the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalscienceleague.org. And now it's time for our free spell segment from our special guest, Doc Murphy of rootdocmurphy.com in Pagadstan, Minnesota. Take it away, Doc Murphy.
Thanks so much, JD. Okay, here's your free spell for this week, and it's nice and simple, and you don't need a lot of supplies, and it's really, really effective. This is to catch what you attract into your life. It's, you can attract love, you can attract money, but what you want to also do is catch it and make sure that you can keep it. So this is what it's going to do. The supplies that you're going to need will include a piece of paper, any kind, but, you know, we like shopping bag paper and parchment and those sorts of papers, but any piece of paper will do. A pen, some incense, and plenty of time. And what you want to do is draw a picture of a spider web on the paper with the pen. Make sure that it goes all the way to the corners of the paper and that there's all the connecting strands that kind of spiral in and take up the whole web and take up the whole paper. Light your incense and pray, then write in tiny, tiny script on all of the web strands what you intend to have and to keep for yourself. Get specific. If you want money, talk about all the money that you want and how you're going to get it and all the things you want to buy. If it's about love, the kind of aspects of the partner that you want to have, and get specific and take the time. Spend as long as you need to get the words exactly as you want them. Keep adding your goals and your intents and your wishes onto the web strands until it's completely filled with your words. If you want, you can draw a little spider in the center with your initials and your birth date on it. And smoke the paper in the incense while praying for all that you want and you deserve. When your prayers are finished, tape or otherwise affix the paper with the web on it to your front door. And it will catch all that you are asking for and that you are attracting into your life and keep it there. So mote it be.
Whoa, wait a minute, Murphy. Huh? To the front of your front door or the inside of your front door?
Hey, you know what? When I was getting this spell done for me by a friend long ago, she said, doesn't matter. Just put it somewhere on your door. So if you want to be showy, put it on the outside of your door. But I have mine on the inside of my door, right in a corner where a spider would spin a web. So that is an artistic choice and your home choice.
I see. Okay. Because that would scare some people off if they had to put it outside. That's a neat spell. Now, that is what I would consider a more pagan style spell than hoodoo. But look what it's got. I mean, but it still uses elements of hoodoo, such as your name and birth date and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you do it on a piece of shopping bag paper, that's an aspect of hoodoo magic too you can work in as well.
Yeah, that's true. Not all hoodoo practitioners use shopping bag paper, but it certainly is just one of those things for people who maybe don't want to go to a stationery store and buy paper. Well, you just tear off a piece of the shopping bag that is not printed with words on it, and you tear it clean on all four sides. And that's an old hoodoo trick to have paper anytime you want it. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for that. Now, I want to talk just a little bit, because this is a specially different show. We are going back to our one-hour format, which we had many, many years ago, partly because YouTube doesn't favor hour-and-a-half shows. People want to get in and get out. Coastside Conjure asked very rationally, does this mean we will do no more free readings? And no, it does not mean that. We probably will do one free reading a month. We've even talked about possibly doing a short show, just a free 15-minute reading show. And then something else. We'd like you to put some comments. Now, you're in the chat log for the live show, but we would love comments when this show is edited and put up. Comments make all the difference for the YouTube algorithm. And we want to know, do you like the one-hour show, or you want us to stay at an hour and a half? The reason we changed is we've been noticing people bail out after an hour. So why give extra time, you know? So we really do want more feedback, and we want more comments. We want more shares. Everybody who's been helping us get going, it's really good. We're going to be away next week. Again, this just has to do with model railroading, another part of our lives, but we'll have a rebroadcast. So I have nothing much more to add to all of this other than I'm really glad that you guys have stuck with us through all of this stuff. We're going to be doing some changes, and we want your feedback all the way, all the time. Margaret Phyllis DeBoer says, I like all the reading show, the all reading show. Yes. And that's.
You used to do two or three.
Yes. Yeah. And Dr. D. Farrell says, I like the readings on a separate show. And Coastside Conjure says, I like to use that time to get some readings. So obviously the readings are definitely going to be continue to be part. We're not dropping the free readings. It's going to be something. Let your friends know if they sign up at the forum for the free readings, or we'll open up the chat. We'll be able to do readings for people that way. Okay. All right. Now it's time for our end announcements.
Thank you, Doc Murphy of DocMurphy.com in Pagan Stan, Minnesota, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest from Association of Infinite Removers will actually be a rebroadcast from one of our favorite shows. The week after, we'll do Lupianos from Lupianos.com in New Baltimore, Maryland, bring us a tutorial on voodoo medicine, vitalism, homotherapy, and the Bach flower remedy. Once again, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Imperial Company in Forestville, California. You can find this cat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman at conjurmanconsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, JD, joining you from HoodooHouseToPlay.com. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Hour can be heard every week via YouTube live stream at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the shows are available at YouTube at youtube.com/LuckyMojo0. For all of that Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you for being here. I invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time, when you will hear the same familiar strain of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you, JD. You've been stalwart here. carrying us on. All right, folks. I do want to say something else about feedback. You can always reach me through forum.luckymojo.com. There's a section there on the radio shows that you can post what you like and what you think we should be doing. We got a note here in chat. Someone said they love the Reading Paloozas. It was Doc Murphy who said it. We love the Reading Paloozas we used to do. And that's kind of where we're aiming for, is maybe a Reading Palooza show once a month, in which we have a bunch of readers and everybody gets a reading. So the only other thing I have to say before we go is I'm going to be off doing model railroading. I'm going to be having a lot of fun. We will have a show on YouTube, so don't worry about that. There will be a show broadcast, but it'll be one of our older shows. And speaking of older shows, if you have an older show that you remember fondly, that time that Stuart Palm was on or whatever it was, please, again, drop us a comment, ask for a show. We'll work it into our schedule because that's what we do. All right, guys. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night. Good night.